All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is daf Zayin. I want to thank Rabbi Huda for giving the shiur yesterday. I know you got towards the bottom of the daf, but just to keep it a little bit easier, let's just pick up at the two dots on Vav Amud Beis 6b. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Noder Umarech. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines up from the bottom. Again, just Yehuda got further. I just want to be clear. I don't want to chaslam be pogame in his dafyomi accomplishments. He got further. I'm moving back a little bit. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Adam and Amy Goldman, as well as Hilly and Ellie Kagan, in honor of the Magide Shir and Moshe Abramson for making it possible to tune into the daf online. Especially yashar koach to our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Sivan, David and Roberta Schwartz, for dedicating all the shirim this month in honor of the members of the shul. I will say with that, let's begin. A beautiful sugya, a number of fascinating sugyas ahead of us today. So we start with this quote from the Mishnah. B'yosi Omer, no der umar. So also remember again, the Mishnah introduced us to the interesting idea about the goses, the person, ultimately again, who is on the cusp of dying. Again, without getting into the technical definitions of goses, which are not really all that material for our sugya right now, but suffice it to say that it's someone who is going to imminently die as a result of some illness, internal or whatever else, or yotzei lehorig, someone who has been sentenced to execution and is being led out for execution. Rabbi Yossi said in the Mishnah, noder umarech, he has the ability to go ahead and make a neder, meaning to go ahead and make a neder regarding his value, to pledge his value to the Beis HaMikdash, umarech, and he has the ability also to make an erechin vow, umakdish, and he has the ability to consecrate something, vimhezik chayiv. Furthermore, if he caused damage, if this individual who's being led out to be executed, who's a goses, damages, he will be chayiv for those damages. So also with that, let's begin. Says the Gemara, v'tanakama mi ka'amar dolo. So does the Tanakama actually argue in Rabbi Yossi regarding these items? Elo, the truth is, in the realm of if this individual who's the goses or is yotzei lehareg ultimately again makes a neder, an erechin vow, or is makdish something, everyone agrees that it works. Ki pligi. So I say, where does the machlokis come up? And this is really quite fascinating. Bim hezek. Well, so listen to this case. Somebody who's, it's actually even more dramatic with a guy being let out to be executed. A guy's been let out to be executed, and on his way out, he goes ahead and he damages someone. This guy has serious problems. And I say again, remember, he's been sentenced to execution for a crime, and on his way out, you know, he damages someone. So he's mazik someone. Tanakama sover. Hezek eno chayiv bit im hezek eno chayiv bitashlumin. Tanakama holds that ultimately, again, if this individual did damage, he is not chayiv to go ahead and pay restitution. Rabbi Yossi holds im hezek chayiv bitashlumin. If he damaged, he is chayiv to pay restitution. So what's that? My kamiflagi. What are they arguing about? So this is quite interesting. Rav Yosef, b'milva al peh govem in hayarshim kamiflagi. Mostly what they're arguing about is as follows. If there is an unrecorded debt, right? So let's say again, someone dies with an unrecorded debt. An unrecorded debt means a debt that does not have a shtar. It's not recorded in a shtar. So halacha lemaisa, is such a debt like that collectible from inheritors or not? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Milva ape kegon ze shehezek velo amad bedin al kach kodem lisa. So we'll say, listen to this. Let me start with a simple case. The simple case will be as follows. Reuven borrows $1,000 from Shimon. It's never recorded in a shtar. Reuven dies. Shimon comes to Reuven's yarshim, his inheritor, says, your father borrowed money from me. So let's assume for a moment we're not contesting that the debt exists or not. The shaila is, do you have the ability to collect an unrecorded debt from inheritors or not? What does that have to do with our case? Because we'll say, watch this. Reuven's been sentenced to death. Let's keep it easy. Reuven ate on Yom Kippur. Reuven ain't on Yom Kippur, right? So he's going to be sentenced to death. Well, that's the wrong case. Reuven was Mechal Shabbos before Hesiod, right? He intentionally was Mechal Shabbos in public. So what happens? He goes out and is now sentenced to death. On his way out to be executed, he breaks Shimon's arm. So we'll see. Then what happens? Reuven is executed. Shimon wants to collect damages from Reuven's heirs. So we'll say, so that idea, that damage is ultimately like an unrecorded debt. There's a chiyuv, but of course, again, it was never recorded. Now, I'll say, what would be recorded in this situation? A din Torah, right? Under normal circumstances, had Reuven not been let out to be executed, Shimon would have called him to Beis Din. Beis Din would have passed in against Reuven. That would have been a recorded debt. So the shaila is, in this case, can Shimon collect from Reuven's heirs after Reuven's been executed? Tanakama, sorry, Melva, Panel, Government, Ayarshan. Tanakama holds that an unrecorded debt cannot be collected from inheritors. Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says no. Milva alpeh. Excuse me. Rabbi Yossi holds milva alpeh. An unrecorded debt can be collected from Yarshim. Rava Amarava says, Tukuli alma, milva alpeh, ino government of Yarshim. So we'll say in Rava's model, Rava says everyone agrees that in reality an unrecorded debt cannot be collected from Yarshim. Vahacha, b'milva k'suva b'torah k'mefkir. Well, see, here the machlok is actually something very different, fascinating. What about a biblical debt? What's the status of a biblical debt? Tanakama savar, we'll see what that means in just a moment. Tanakama savar, milva k'suva b'torah, lav k'suva b'shtar dami. So Tanakama holds, a biblical debt is not the equivalent as if it has been recorded in a document. Rabbi Yossi savar, k'suva b'shtar dami. Rabbi Yossi says, a biblical debt is like it is recorded in a document. So what's a biblical debt? A biblical debt is any time you owe money because of a Torah obligation. So think about this. If you damage someone, what kind of debt is that? A biblical debt. Why? Why? Because Torah Kedosha tells you that if you damage someone, you have to pay damages. So says the Gemara, that's really what they're arguing about. That's the Tanakh Rabbi Yossi arguing about over here. That if you are biblically liable to someone, is that the equivalent as if the debt was recorded in a shtar or not? What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina will be is if the damager dies, is the debt collectible from the yarshim? If you hold that a biblical debt is like it's recorded in a document, then ultimately you collect it from yarshim. If it's like it's not recorded in a document, then perhaps you cannot go ahead and collect it from yarshim. V'ikitamasni l'aha. Others go ahead and frame this machlokus in the following statement. Hayotze deharig. If someone is being let out to be executed, ultimately, again, who shechav ba'achirim? If he, the person who's about to be executed, damages other people, chayif. So we'll say Reuven is being let out to be executed. If he damages Shimon, he will be chayif for that. Achirim shechav lubo pturin. Interestingly enough, if other people damage Reuven, as he's being let out, it's like flip the case. Reuven's being let out to be executed. And on his way out, Shimon breaks his arm. So can Reuven sue for damages? So the Brachos over here is saying no. But I say, why no? Rashi says, Turin, last Rashi on the daf, de'in lo damim v'omid hu lichavel. Because we'll say, at the end of the day, once you have a verdict against you for execution, what's that locha? It's kilu, you're dead. Meaning, forget about damages, I will say. If Reuven was sentenced to die, and someone killed him, they would not be chayiv for taking his life. Because once he has that gemar din, it's as if he's already dead. If you wouldn't be chayiv for killing him, he's not going to be chayiv for damages. Rabbi Shimon says, af hu chava ba'achirim pater. Rabbi Shimon says, even if Reuven, who's going to be executed, damaged someone else, Reuven will also be pater. Why? Shelo nitein lechazaras amidas bezin. Oh, this is very interesting. Why is Reuven pater? Because Reuven is not subject to being brought to Beis Din anymore. Isn't this interesting? You see, I will say, apparently what the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows. The only time you could be found chayiv for something, and the only time we could say that you have a quote-unquote biblical debt is when? Is if you are capable of being brought before Beis Din. In this case where Reuven is being let out to be executed, and he injures someone on his way to being let out, he will not be chayiv in any type of tashlumin. Why? Because it is not possible to bring him back to Beis Din for another Din Torah. Why is it not possible to bring him back to Beis Din for another Din Torah? We'll say, why? Because we have a concept. Not, this is interesting. Good answer, because he's already dead. The truth is, but he's not dead. There's a different reason, which is because once someone has been sentenced to death, we do not delay the execution. Think about this just a moment. You know, you hear these stories about these inmates in jail who sit on death row for years. I always wonder. Sounds like I guess I have a dark side to me. I always wonder, what does that mean, like to live like that, where you know, again, you're sentenced to death and you're waiting. You're just waiting. In halacha, there is no such concept like that. If you are sentenced to die, the sentence is carried out immediately. And we do not do anything that ultimately delays that execution. So if Reuven's been sentenced to die, so the Gemara is suggesting over here, Reuven's being let out, and he damages someone. So is there the ability to technically say he should be chayiv? So technically yes, because even though halachically he's dead, he's still alive. And even if you can't go ahead and extract any money from him, maybe you can extract money from his yarshim. But since it's not capable of bringing him back to Beis Din, it's not capable because bringing him back ultimately would lead to a delay in his execution. Therefore, it's an unenforceable claim. Because it's an unenforceable claim, therefore, Rabbi Shimon posits that ultimately he'll be potter. Top of Zayin Michlal. The Tanakama Sarah Nitan Lachazar Samid Zayin. One second. The Tanakama who holds that Reuven would be chayiv if he damages while being let out to be executed, seems to indicate that halacha lemaisa, the Tanakam would hold that you can't bring him back to Beis Din for adjudication. Amar Rabbi Yosef, b'milva al peh govim en ayershin kamiflagi. In reality, what they're arguing about is as follows. A verbal debt, meaning an unsecured debt, a debt that is not recorded in a document. Can you collect that money from Yarshim? Tanakama sever milval pek of min Yarshim. Tanakama holds an aloha lamaisa. Even a verbal debt can be extracted from Yarshim. And therefore, again, aloha lamaisa, when Reuven is being let out to be executed, if he damages, you can extract that money from his heirs. Tanakama sever milval pek, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar sever, eno government of Yarshim. Shimon Elazar holds no. A verbal debt cannot be extracted from Yarshim. Rabba says, no. In reality, everyone agrees that if you have an unsecured debt, a verbal debt, that cannot be extracted from Yarshin. So what's the machlokis here? As we said before, v'hacha, b'milvaksuva b'torah, kiksuva b'shtar damya. Kiksuva b'shtar. But so here the machlokis is, if you have a biblical debt, is a biblical debt the equivalent? Is the fact that a certain debt is recorded in Torah, does that make it as if it's recorded in the shtar or not? Rabbi Shimon Elazar Sover, lav kiksuva b'shtar damya. Rabbi Elazar holds that a biblical debt is like it's not recorded. I'm sorry, I skipped. Tanakama Sover, kiksuva b'shtar damya. Tanakama holds that a biblical debt is like it is written in a document. Therefore, Tabo say, when Reuven is being led out to be executed and he damages Shimon, that is a quote unquote biblical debt because Torah provides payment for damages. It's as if it's written in a document. If it's written in a document, then halacha lemaisa, you could extract that from the Yarshim. Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds no. Excuse me. Lav kiksuva b'shtar damyo. Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds no that halacha lemaisa, A biblical debt is not like it is recorded in a document, and therefore, again, you would not be able to extract repayment from the Yarshim of Reuven. Meisve, so the Gemara raises a kasha. The Gemara is a kasha. Hachofer bar b'shus rabosei. Listen to this interesting case. Someone is digging a pit in Rosh Hashanah. So I'm going to say, big no-no. You're not allowed to dig a pit in Rosh Hashanah. So Reuven's digging a pit in Rosh Hashanah. V'nafal alav shar v'hargo. Let's listen to this case. Reuven's digging the pit, illegal digging in Rosh Hashanah. And then what happens? Shimon's shar comes along, falls on Reuven, the pit digger, and goes ahead and kills him. So what's the halacha? Potter. Shimon, the owner of the shar, is potter. It's potter. Not only that, Ella Shimesa Shar. Well, said not only is Shimon the owner of the shar potter, but if the shar dies as a result of falling in the pit, even though it killed Reuven also, Yarshe Balabar Chayav and the Sharleim Dmei Shar Labaylov. Reuven's inheritors, Reuven the pit digger, right? Reuven's Yarshim are Chayav to pay Shimon the value of the shar. We'll say, bottom line, don't dig a bar in Rosh Hashanah. That's the takeaway message from this. So I say, if you did it and Reuven does it, if the shar falls in, right? If the shar falls in and kills Reuven, Shimon, the owner of the shar, is potter. Not only that, but if the shar dies, ultimately, again, the Yershim of Reuven are obligated to repay the owners of the shar for the value of the shar. Now, what do you see from here? So we'll say this would seem to be a case where what? So look at Rashi. Chayavin l'shalim. Rashi says, top three, third line down from the top. Alma milva ksuva b'tora kiksuva b'shtar damya. So we'll say, what does this show you? Now again, the idea of bar, right? The halacha of bar. What does the halacha of bar say? That if you dig a bar and someone else is damaged, you are chayiv to pay restitution. This is what's called a milva haksuva batora. So this is a biblically recorded debt. And yet, what do you see from here? That when you have a biblically recorded debt, what's the halacha? You can extract payment from the Yarshim. Because remember again, what does it say? Shimon, the owner of the shar, can go in and collect payments from Reuven's Yarshim. So from here you see quite explicitly that what? That halacha l'maisa, two things. Number one, milva haksuva batora is kiksuva bishtar damya. When you have biblically recorded debt, it's as if it's recorded in a document. And then, of course, once you say that, if it's recorded in a document, then what? Then what? You can certainly go back and then extract payment from the Yershim, the inheritors of the initial claimant. So Amar Abila, so I'll say, so Yimar says, no. Amar Abila, Amar Rav. No, the case here is different. Kisha Amad Bedin. No, the case over is actually where they brought Reuven to a Din Torah. Reuven, the one who dug the pit, was actually brought to a Din Torah. That's why his Yershim will be chayiv to pay the value of the shar. What are you talking about? I'm sorry? Okay, calm down. Good. Baruch Hashem, excellent. Baruch Shekivanta. What do you mean they brought him to Din? The Bryce says, supposedly he died, right? Reuven's in the pit. The shar fell on him, and Reuven died. So how can you say he was brought to Beis Din? Amr of Adabar Ava, Kisha Asa'u Trefa. So the Gemara suggests, no, maybe the case of Rebbe says, well, what? The shar fell on Reuven, but Reuven didn't immediately die. Instead, what happened? He was made into a trefa, right? So again, he was mortally injured, but he was still alive enough to ultimately go to Beis Din. And therefore, there was a Din Torah. He was found liable. And because he was found liable in Beis Din, that's why the Yershim will be chayiv to pay. One second. Vamar Rav Nachman, Tani Tano, mace the Kavro. But one second, second Rav Nachman says, but that's not what the Braisa says, right? The way Rav Nachman read the Braisa is that the shar fell on Reuven and what? Buried him in the pit, which sounds like halacha l'maisa. Reuven never emerged from the pit. To which the Gemara says, v'hilchasa diyasvi daina apuma debira. To which the Gemara says, what's the case over here? Where ultimately, again, there happened to be a Beis Din by the edge of the pit when all of this occurred. So the Beis Din see it, and ultimately, again, it's all about timing. All about timing. So I say, so what happens? So the Beis Din was there, and the Beis Din found Reuven Chayiv. So I say, so therefore, again, because the Beis Din found Reuven Chayiv, ultimately, and because it was a Din Torah, That's why the owners of the shar can extract payment from the Yarshim of Reuven, because it was a Din Torah. But without a Din Torah, you would not be able to necessarily extrapolate that what? That milva ksuva b'Torah is kiksuva b'shtar dam. You look at Rashi. V'ilchasa, hadik tani yarshin chayav and kigom diyasvi dayani apuma debira v'chayvua miyad l'shalim. So we'll say, again, a little bit of a very narrow explanation, but the point the Gemara is saying over is you can't bring a raya from this, that from this case we see that milva ksuva b'Torah is kiksuva b'shtar dam. The Gemara says, Tana Abanon. Here we go, another case. Hayotzi de Harig. So what's the interesting case? If Reuven's being led out to be executed, Mazin Alav Midam Chatos. This is actually a fascinating case. Let's say Reuven had a chatos that he had not offered. So Shai Rabosa is now he's been condemned. He's being led out to be executed. Can we offer his chatos on his behalf? Now, but remember again, we've learned a number of times that one of the types of animals that is left to die is a chatos shemesu ba'alov. Right? If you have a chatos offering and the owner died, there's really nothing to do with that chatos except to let it die. So what's what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that halacha l'maisa, even though Reuven has been condemned to death, we still allow his chatos to be offered and its blood to be sprinkled. So umidam hashamo. I'm sorry. Mazin alav midam chatos midam hashamo. Look at Rashi just a moment. Mazin alav zorkin b'shvilo dam chatosa v'hashamo v'lo havye kechatos shemesu ba'aleha kol zman shelo nerag. So as long as Reuven is still physically alive, we allow his chatos to be offered on his behalf. Now, Rabbi says, what's the novelty here? The novelty is, although in some respects, once he's been sentenced to death, he's like what? He's like dead, right? V'haray, if you were to kill him, you would not be chayiv for that. In other respects, he's still very much alive. So if he had not yet offered up his chatas, he would still be permitted to go and offer up his chatas on his behalf. So the Gemara says, chata ba'osa shah. Well, listen to this. Reuven is a busy guy. Let's say as he's being led out to be executed, he commits an avera for which he would be chayiv ultimately again for chata. So I'll say, for example, what would be an example of this? Look at Rashi. Chata b'shogeg ba'osa shah, she'yotze li'hari kigon she'ra'a chaylev u'kasev ha'shuman. So I'll say, some people have no mazel. Right, so Reuven is being led out. They offer him his last meal. He says, I'd love some shuman, some schmaltz. He ends up eating the shuman. It turns out that it's chaylev. Right? Yisr Kares. Right? But again, it's b'shogeg. It's b'shogeg. So if he did something that warrants a chatos as he's being led out, then what? In this kakinlo, halacha lemaisa, we do not offer up any type of, we do not separate a chatos on his behalf. My taimo, what's the reason? Rav Yosef me'ein mipnei she'ein ma'anin es dino. A very simple idea, because halacha lemaisa, we don't do anything to delay his execution. And therefore, both say, if when he's being led out to be executed, he commits an avera that warrants a chatos, if we start separating out the karban, it's going to delay the execution. And we don't do that. Abai says, 1 second. Right? But again, I don't understand. If that's the case, then what? Even if he incurred the liability for the chatos beforehand, right? Meaning before he was condemned, still doing the chatos after he has been sentenced is still going to delay his execution. Remember again, offering of a carbon. Is it to do? There's the shechita, there's the zrika, there's everything. So I would say the same thing, even if he incurred chatas liability before his sentencing, halacha lemaisa, we still shouldn't offer up the chatas after his sentencing, because there's the possibility that it will delay the execution, to which the Gemara says, you're right, what's the case? Kegon shahaya zavocha zavuach ba'osa shah. But we're talking about a case where, by the time he was sentenced, the chatas was already shechted. It was already shechted. So therefore, the Braisa, if it was already shechted, we could do the zrika of the dam, says the Gemara. Well, if that's the case, right? Aval in zivcho zavuach mai. But if his chatas was not already shechted by the time of sentencing, then what? Lo. Then ultimately, again, we would not shecht his chatos. If that's the case, adatani chata ba'osa shah in his kakin lo. If that's the case, then why do you have to introduce a new case of where he sinned after sentencing? Liflog v'lisne b'didei. You can make the fundamental distinction in one case. Even if Reuven was liable to a chatos prior to his sentencing, when do we say we offer his chatos? Shahaya zevach zavuach ba'osa shah. When the chatos is already shechted, aval in zevach zavuach lo, paralocha lemaisef what? If his carbon was not yet shechted, then we would not offer it up, even if he incurred chatos liability prior to his sentencing. To which the Gemara says, "Hachinami kamer." You're right. This is what it means to say. When do we say that you offer up the chatos on behalf of a person that's been condemned? Shahaya zevach zavuach ba'osasha. If the chatos was already shechted. So I say, if the chatos was already shechted, then we allow the rest of the process to play out, zvik and everything else. Aval in zavach zavuach, Rabbi Seif, halacha lamaisa, Reuven was condemned, and his chatos was not yet shechted, then what? Then halacha lamaisa, na'asa kimi shechata ba'osa shah, we would treat that as a case where, halacha lamaisa, he just sinned, ve'ein niskakim. So it turns out that halacha lamaisa, whether Reuven sinned before sentencing or sinned after sentencing, ultimately, again, halacha lamaisa, the only way we'll offer up his chatas is when? Is if it was already shechted. If it was already shechted and the process is underway, and therefore, again, the sprinkling of the blood will not result in any type of delay of execution, then halacha lamaisa, we will do it. But if either, again, he sinned before, but the carbon was not yet shechted, or he sinned after sentencing, halacha lemaisa, we will not go ahead and offer up the chatas. Incredible. So let's see, now we go weiter. Says the Mishnah. So I will say, so actually, for those of us who spent Shavuos night learning together, we spent a good 5 hours focusing on this particular Mishnah. This Mishnah here, this Sugya, is the source for the fundamental shitos of the Yavis, of the Chovas Yoyer, among many others in the realm of abortion. Here we go. It says the Mishnah. This Mishnah, I'm the Mishnah Erechin. I'm sorry? It's Sunday. Oh, we can do a quick recap of this year. I can get it in 4.5. I can come in and supposed to listen to this. A woman is about to be executed. So we'll say in this case over here, a woman has been sentenced to execution. She's pregnant. Ein mamtina la achetelet. We do not wait for her to give birth. Rather, halacha lamaisa, we execute her even while she's pregnant, even though, again, her death will result ultimately, again, in the death of the child. So we'll say, so if you look at Rashi, Ein mamtina la ad shetelet, Rashi says, Ela hargin vlado ima. We go ahead and we kill the baby along with her. Dechad gufahu. We'll say, this Rashi, I just want to tell you, one little Rashi in Erechin fundamentally shapes the entire Jewish view, not the entire, right, but a large majority of the Jewish view on abortion. Rashi HaKadosh is clearly saying that what? A fetus does not have an independent entity. A fetus is not an independent life source, but rather a fetus is a part of the mother. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, if the mother is sentenced to death, the baby has no independent. That Judaism is profoundly pro-life, like the church. We don't agree with the church at all in the realm of abortion, because I will say again, the church feels that from the moment of inception or conception, right, that a fetus has rights. So again, we don't subscribe to that concept at all. Certainly not from the time that a woman conceives. That's for sure. First 40 days in halacha is a separate discussion. But again, you see Rashi HaKadosh saying that, right, remember again, I want to point out, the Mishnah makes no distinction over here about what? Right? How far along in her pregnancy she is. Whether she's 1 month pregnant or 9 months pregnant. Halacha lemaisa, if she's condemned to death, halacha lemaisa, again, we kill her, even though, again, her death is going to result in the death of the fetus. Again, interesting discussion. So the Gemara says as follows, Imam tilash atelid. So ultimately, again, once a woman has, we'll say, literally has sat down on the birthing stool. So generally, the way we understand this to mean is she's gone into labor. When she's gone into labor, mamtina la achetelet. Or once she's gone into labor, halacha lamaisa, we wait for her to give birth. So Rashi says over here, dechevan de'akar v'namim komo gufa achrinohu. So Rashi seems to understand that once labor has begun, now the fetus has its own independent identity. Therefore, wait for her to give birth before executing her. Haisha Shenerga, a woman who has been executed, Nenin Bisara. We are permitted to get benefit from her hair. Behema Shenerga Asturabhana. But a behema that was killed, that was executed, ultimately you can't get any hana from the behema. Good. Says the Gemara, Pshita. This is incredible. So remember again, focusing on the first halacha, that if a woman is pregnant and sentenced to death, we go ahead and we execute her, ultimately, again, even before she's given birth. The Gemara says, that's obvious. Gufahi. The fetus is not an independent entity. It's part of the mother. Itzrich saradait chamina ha'oluksiv, kasha yoshis alav bala isha, mamona debalhu, velo lifse de mine. So you must say, remember again, I might have thought that halacha lemaisa, it's not just the mother, the father also has a financial interest in this fetus. Right? This fetus represents, again, not just the child of the father, but a financial interest. So therefore, I might have thought we have to wait till the mother gives birth in order not to deprive the father, ultimately, again, of his financial interests. Kamash will know. Kamash will then halacha lemaisa, even though the father does have, but we'll say the financial interests come up in the other pasuk in Mishpatim, where two men are fighting, v'nagfu ishahara, right? One of them injures a pregnant woman, she miscarries. So what's the halacha? The damager has to pay the husband of the woman, kasher yoshis alav bala isha. There's financial restitution. A pregnant woman is worth X plus Y. A woman who's not pregnant is worth X. If you damage a pregnant woman and she miscarries, you have to pay the value, so to speak, of those damages. So I might have thought that, again, there's a financial issue for the husband over here. Therefore, maybe we should wait until the woman gives birth to go ahead and execute her. Kamashal, no. That we execute her even while she's pregnant. I ve'ema hachanami, but why not? In other words, why not? Why don't you go ahead and say that we wait to execute until she gives birth? I'm Rabbi Avo, I'm Rabbi Yochanan Amakra, Umesu Gam Shnehem. Suppose it's actually quite amazing. The pasuk says, and both of them will die. The Gemara in the sense, the Rabos es Havlad. The Shnehem over here comes to include what? The mother, and if she's pregnant with a child. V'haimi boy, one second, we need that pasuk for something else. Achu Shnehem Shavin. The Rabos said, this pasuk is actually mentioned in the realm of adultery. And what we learn out from here is, the only time that the woman, that the adulterer and the adulteress are put to death is when the shteim shoven, when they're both adults. If one of them is a minor, then halacha lemaisa, there is no death penalty for adultery. The Rabbi Yoshia, ki ka'amrit migam. You're right. Inachinam Rabbi say, really what we're learning out is from the gam. The gam is also a ribui, and the gam teaches us that what? That halacha lemaisa, if a woman is pregnant and sentenced to execution, ultimately, what halacha lemaisa? She is executed together with her unborn child. I'm Rav Yehuda. My time, kevin de akra gufachrina. Supposed to be, remember again. I'm sorry. Yashva ala mashber. But if she's in labor, we wait for her to deliver before execution. My time. What's the reason? Kevan de akra gufachrina. Once the child again is in. Once labor has begun. Literally, akra means once it's become like dislodged from the womb. Right, once ultimately again the baby is ready to come out, it becomes a separate independent entity, and therefore waits for the mother to give birth. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ha'isha ha'yotza lehareg. If a woman is going out ultimately to be executed, is actually a dramatic gemara. Makin osa kineged beis ha'irayon. Kidei shiyamos havlad tchila. I will say this is pretty wild. If a woman is going to be executed, we actually make her miscarry. We make her miscarry before execution. Why? Kidei shiyamos havlad tchila. Because we want the child to die before her. Why do we want the child to die before her? Kidei shlo tavo lidei nivol. Because we'll say what we're concerned about is that ultimately, again, if we don't make her miscarry before she's executed, then ultimately, again, the baby will survive her. The baby will still be alive. And what Rashi seems to indicate over here is the baby will try to come out even after she is dead. And that will be a terrible desecration to her body. So it's so interesting. Meaning, again, we have a concept that we don't want, even though this woman is going to be executed, obviously she committed some type of high crime, but nevertheless, after she's dead, we want to maintain the dignity of her corpse. If the baby is still alive when she is dead, the baby may attempt to come out, and that'll be a terrible nivul hames. So what do? Literally, we injure her until she miscarries. So the Gemara says, "Lamemra, is that true? Is that to tell us the he kadma umesa bereisha?" So what you're telling me then is, if generally, if we were to execute the mother, that the mother would die first, and the baby would still be alive even after the death of the mother. So the Gemara says, "But 1 second, v'ha'kaimalan divlad ma'is bereisha." But in general, we have a concept. We assume that when the mother is put to death, it's the child that dies first. This now, because we learned in the Mishnah, Tinok ben Yomo Nochel Umanchil, but say if you have a child who is 1 day old, that child, because it's alive, has the ability to inherit and to bequeath. Va'amar Rav Sheshes Nochel ben Echsiaim, or say, for example, if this child was the only surviving heir of the mother, he would inherit all of the mother's property. La'anchil la'achem in Avin, if this child were then to die, he would inherit the mother's property, then bequeath it to his brothers from his father. So the Gemara says, Dafka ben yom echad. This is Dafka with a child who is 1 day old. Aval uber lo. They will say, but obviously a child in utero, an uber, a fetus, has no ability to inherit or to bequeath. So the Gemara says, why not? Dehu mayis bereisha. Ultimately, and because we assume that if the mother dies while pregnant, that the child dies first. The baby in utero dies before the mother. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ena ben yorish es imo bekever," and a child is incapable of inheriting his mother when he is already dead. So the Gemara says, "Lahan chila achin minav." Sahani mi, the Rabbi say, when do we say ultimately again that the baby in utero predeceases the mother? That's Misa, Lagabi Misa. When the mother dies, quote unquote, of natural causes in a natural way, we assume that the baby predeceases the mother. But in this case over here, Aidi Divlad Zutrach Yusei, since the child's life force is weaker than the mother's, Aili Tipa Tamalach Hamavis Umechatech Lele Simonim. The Tipa, we'll say this goes back to the Yoram Sechas Nida that says that when a person dies, the Malach Hamavis comes with its sword and drops a bit of Mara, of Malach Hamavis poison. Right, and it's that poison ultimately again that kills the individual. That poison, the Gemara says, kills the baby before it kills the mother. But that's only first. That's only in the course of natural death. Aval nerga. But in the case where the mother is executed, he may sebereisha v'ha chava. So he may sebereisha. Ultimately, again, the mother dies first, and the baby can still be alive. But 1 second, but we've seen situations where what? Where the mother has died of natural causes first, and the baby has still convulsed up to 3 times, and there's been movement in the womb, even after the mother is dead, which is seen to indicate to us that halacha lemaisa, even after natural death, the baby could still survive the mother, to which the Gemara says no. Midi dahavi azanav halta demefarcheses. But say that movement that we see of the baby in the womb after the mother dies, that's not a sign of life. That's like if you cut off the tail of a lizard, what happens? The tail still moves around, even if it's after detached. I forgot what the medical term is. What is it called when there's movement? Right? This is with the chicken, right? This is a famous chicken thing. Right? You cut off the head of the chicken, and the chicken still moves around afterwards. The idea is that even after death, there could still be some spasmodic motion. But halacha lemaisa said that's not indicative of life. That's just muscle spasms. So the Gemara goes like, I'm not going to Shmuel. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, what the Gemara is arriving at is quite fascinating. So halacha lemaisa, here's what we have. If a woman is sentenced to death, we will execute her even though she's pregnant. Why? Because the fetus is not considered a separate entity. Ultimately, again, it's part of the mother. Halacha lemaisa will cause her to miscarry prior to execution because we don't want the dignity of her corpse to be compromised by the baby moving around. When the mother dies of natural causes, we assume that halacha lemaisa, the baby has what? The fetus has predeceased the mother. Sometimes the fetus moves around even after the death of the mother. That's just post-death spasms. But that is not indicative of life. But where there is an execution, that's the possibility of the fetus to outlive the mother. Therefore, we cause the mother to miscarry prior to her execution. So the Gemara says, Vayter. Amrav Nachman, Amr Shmuel, Isha sheyashva al hamashper umeisa b'shabbos, mevi'in sakin umekarem es kreisa umotzim es havar. But it's an interesting case. Switching gears just a moment. A woman, Nebach, died. She died in labor. And we bring a knife. We go ahead and we bring a knife. Umekarem es kreisa. And we rip open her stomach. In other words, we perform an emergency C-section. And we go ahead and we extract the vlad. We extract the baby. To which the Gemara says, Pshita. So that's obvious. My obvious. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, what's the chiddush? Rashi says, Umekaren es kresa. Last Rashi, that the zimnin, the mikri, the my spiritual. So here's what's interesting. As much as we just said, when a woman dies of natural causes, what happens? What happens? The baby dies before her. So we'll say, so I would say, therefore, when a mother dies in labor, that's ultimately called, that's called dying of natural causes. Okay. Air conditioning, good. So I said, ultimately, again, that's called dying of natural causes. So yet again, what we see is nevertheless we're going to do an emergency C-section. So what Rashi says is because sometimes halacha lemaisa, the fetus does survive the mother. Sometimes it happens, even though the norm is that halacha lemaisa. We will go ahead and the fetus will predecease the mother. Sometimes the fetus outlives the mother. So pshita, my Ovid, so the Gemara says, mechatech babasahu. So I'll say ultimately again, so what's meaning, what's the chiddush? What's the chiddush over here? In other words, we'll say if you're talking about a din in Shabbos, ultimately again, so the mother's dead. So there's no din of chovel. We'll also remember again, halacha lemaisa in Shabbos, you're not permitted to go ahead and injure someone in a way that draws blood. is actually a tolda of the Av Malacha of Shechita. So maybe you'll see over here, there's nothing to talk about because here the mother is dead. Amarav alo nitzricha lahavi sakim derech rishus harabim. No. What's the novelty of here, Rabbi Osai? The novelty over here is the knife that you need to perform the emergency C-section is somewhere in the rishus harabim. So you're going to have to do a biblical act of hotzah. Umay kamash malon. So we'll say, what do you see from here? So we'll say, what's the chiddush? The chiddush over here is because of safek, sakhanas, nafashas, because there's a possibility, there's a safek, that's what? The baby's still alive, so mechalo Shabbos, bring the knife, because again, even though bringing the knife is chalo Shabbos, because ultimately, again, sveka mechalin on Shabbos. So, fine. So what are you going to tell me? That because of safek, sakhanas, nafashos, you could be mechalo Shabbos. Tanina, we already learned this once before. Misha nafla alav mapolas. Let's listen to this. If somebody is buried under rubble, somebody's right, a building fell on someone, chas v'shalom. Safek husham, safek enosham. So we'll say, so number one, we're not sure if there's a person buried in the rubble or not. Safek chai, safek meis. And if there's a person, we're not sure of what. Is he alive or is he dead? Safek knani, safek Yisrael. If he's Jewish or not Jewish. So we'll say, what's talocha? Mefakkin alav esagal. Let's say Salach Lamaisa, we remove the rubble. So what do you see from here? Even though the removal of the rubble also entails Chilul Shabbos, so what do you see from here? You see from here that you are Mechalo Shabbos because of Safek Sakhanas Nefashos. So if that's the case, we already learned that concept before. So of course, when the mother dies in childbirth, and there's a possibility that the baby is alive, of course we'll be Mechalo Shabbos to go ahead and potentially save the baby. We've already learned that concept. No, I would say it like this. What would you have thought? We'll say, here's the difference. In the case of the rubble, the suffix is regarding a person who was alive. Meaning, we know that if there's a person in there, at some point in time, they were definitively alive. In the case of the fetus, there's no chazaka that the fetus on earth, the shaila is, was the fetus even ever alive at all? So we'll say, in the case of the person who may or may not be buried under the rubble, I know that there's a possibility of what we call like a cheskas chai. If there's a person in there, they were alive. And it's possible they're still alive. Maybe in the case of the fetus, there's never a quote-unquote cheskas chai. The fetus was quote-unquote never alive. So maybe I shouldn't be able to mechal Shabbos. Kamash v'ano. Kasha will say that even in the case of a fetus, it would be mechal Shabbos ultimately again to say the fetus. Also, I'll just tell you, by the way, in the abortion debate, so you just know that Moshe, Sechetak Levracha, is probably one of the most machmir when it comes to the discussion of abortion, and essentially holds that abortion is never permitted, unless, of course, the life of the mother is at stake. Again, this will say, again, no other situation. Baby's terminally ill, not terminally ill. The mother is mental health. Moshe, life of the mother. So one of the rights that Moshe brings is this. The fact that ultimately, again, we are Mechalo Shabbos, to save the Uber, even if the mother is dead. Let's remember again, in this case, the mother has died in childbirth. There's not another case where the mother is in labor, so we have to get the baby out because the mother's life is in danger. Here, the mother is dead. Yet, what do you see? That Allah Kalamaisa, and we're not sure if the fetus is alive or not. Yet, we're still Mechalo Shabbos in order to save the fetus. What does that tell you? That the baby is alive, right? That the fetus has some type of identity as a chai. So I'm like, I said, now we're hashing the whole halacha, but that's what's going on. Good. Says the Gemara. So we'll say, therefore, again, halacha lemaisa, we'll be mechalo Shabbos for the Uber, even though halacha lemaisa, the Uber itself does not have a cheskas chai. So the Gemara goes weiter. Haisha shenerga. So we'll say, if the woman ultimately, again, if the woman is executed, so the halach is you can get benefit from her hair, right? You could go ahead and get hana from her hair. Says the Gemara, va'amai, why is that? Isuri hana ninhu, I don't understand. I will say, in general, halacha lemaisa, anything that is attached to the body, right, is asur bano. You can't get benefits from a mace. You can't get benefit from a corpse. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, her hair is attached to her body. So why should you be able to go ahead and get hana from it? So Amarav ba'omeres tunu se'eri labiti. So let's say, Rav says, what's the case? The case where before she dies, she says, you know what, I have very beautiful hair. Give my hair to my daughter. Give my hair to my daughter. To which the Gemara says, "Ilu." I don't think the Gemara says, "Who cares what she said?" Ilu arma tenu yadi leviti miya avinala. And if she would have said, "Give my arm to my daughter," right? Cut off my hand when I'm dead and give it to my daughter. She should always remember me, right? So again, I will say. So ultimately, again, so would we do such a thing like that? Of course not. We wouldn't lop off the limb of a corpse to give it to a daughter just because the person before they died commanded this. The hair is no different than the limb. Amra papa, no. Let's listen to this. The pan nachris. I will say the case is her shetel. So the woman is being executed. I will say is wearing her shetel. Peinachris is a wig. She's wearing her shetel. So what happens? Before she dies, she says, "When I die, take my shetel and give it to my daughter." Time of damer tenu. Now the reason we would go ahead and give it to, shetels are very expensive. I want to go on the record with this. I say don't be so quick like this is like. This is like a Yerusha. No, it's just a couple of $1,000 over here. So let's listen to this. So Taima the Amra Tenu. Now, interesting enough, the only reason why we allow, ultimately, again, the daughter to get benefit from her mother's sheitel is why? Because the mother, before she was executed, said Tenu. Said, "Give it to my daughter." Halo Amra Tenu. But if she did not say Tenu, so Gufahu, ultimately, again, is considered to be the body of the mother. Umissar, and ultimately again it'll be Asr Bana. So the Gemara says, Vahami Baile, Rabbi Yosi, Vahami Baile, Rabbi Yosi Rechanina. But this is a question that was brought up by Rabbi Yosi Rechanina. By Rabbi Yosi Rechanina, Sear Nashim Tzidkanios Mahu. Right? What happens? We'll say it's a totally different context. So we'll say, this is talking about an Irani Dachos. So if you have an Irani Dachos, remember, which is a city that worshipped Avodah Zarah. So Halacha Lamaisa, the inhabitants of the city are executed, and all the possessions of the city are destroyed. If there are righteous people who live in that city, they are taken out. They are not executed together with the residents of the city. But essentially, they go out without any possessions, including their clothing, everything else. So what about the hair of a righteous woman from an Irani Dachos? What's its status? For Amarav, Arav wouldn't mean her hair, but Pe'an Nochris. Right? Ultimately, again, with her Shetel. Right? That was the Shetel. Ultimately, again, what's the halacha? What's the halacha concerning her Shetel? To which the Gemara says, Pe'an Nochris, Lokami Ba'ile. Kikami Ba'ile, Rabbi Yosef Mechanina, the Tali B'sichsa. So I'll say, so ultimately, again, if the shetel's on her head, there's no shayla that she can go out with it because it's considered to be part of her body. Where does the shayla come up? What if her shetel was hanging on a peg? Right? The shetel was not on her head. So what are the ramifications ultimately, again, on her shetel? If she lived in an Irani Dachos, this woman is a righteous woman, so her life is going to be spared. The question shayla is, what about, is her shetel going to be spared? If the shekel's on her head, it's no shayla, then why? Why? Because it's part of her body. So ultimately, it won't destroy it. What if the shekel's hanging on a peg? So the Gemara says, Hacha de mechaberba. So time with the Amar Tenu, Halo Amar Tenu, Gufahu umitsar. So ultimately, again, the way it comes out is that Halacha l'maisa. The only reason why we will permit the shetel to be given to the daughter is why? Because the mother said Tenu. Had she not made the explicit stipulation of giving it to my daughter, we would treat the shetel as part of her body, and therefore, again, would not permit anyone to get benefits from it. So we'll say, so halacha l'maisa, what the Gemara is suggesting is as follows. When the Mishnah says that when the woman is executed, you could get benefits from her seyar, benefits from her hair, that is a very specific case. It does not refer to her actual hair. Her actual hair is a part of her body, and one cannot get benefit from any part of the body, from any part of a corpse. The case is a very specific one where she's wearing a shetel, right? And she says, "When I die, give my shetel to my daughter." If she made that explicit stipulation before she died, we will listen to that stipulation and give the shetel to the daughter. If she did not make that stipulation, then what? Then what? Then halacha l'maisa, the shetel will be asur bana. Why? Because it's considered to be attached to her body. Says the Gemara, Kashya le'el Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, this is problematic for him. Va'dumya de'behema katani. But one second, the Mishnah equates the cases of the woman's hair with the case of behema. Ma hasam gufe, just like ultimately again in the case of the behema, you can't get any benefits from the guf of the behema. So to av hachanami gufe, so to in the case of the woman, the pashas are talking about her body. El amrav Nachman, Zu misasa osarta vizu gemardina osarta. To which the Gemara of Rav Nachman says, it's actually two different cases, or two different situations. See, Rabbi say, ultimately, when it comes to benefits from a corpse, it is the misa which ultimately goes ahead and asers. Right? When it comes ultimately to the behemoth, it's the gemardin that creates the iser. Tani levi kavase dirav, tani levi kavase dirav nachar bar Yitzchok. So Levi Abosei taught both of these halachos, one in accordance with Levi, one in accordance with Rav, and one in accordance with Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Tani Levi Kavasei Dirav. So Levi taught this in accordance with Rav. Ha'isha Shiyotzei Harid. Woman was being allowed to be executed. Va'amar Tanu Sari Lebiti. And she says, give my hair to my daughter. No snin, we give it to the daughter. Mesa, but ultimately, again, if she's executed, ain't no snin, ultimately, again, we don't give it to the daughter. Why? Mipnei Shehameis Aser Bano. Because ultimately, again, a corpse is aser bano. Pshita, isn't that obvious? Ella shenoye hames aser bano. But I said the novelty is that obviously anything that's part of the actual body of the mace is ultimately aser bano. But not only that, noye hames, anything that is attached to the body of the mace at the time of death ultimately becomes aser bano as well. That's why halacha lemaisa, the shetel, which is attached to her body at the time of her death, ultimately becomes aser bano. Now, because the shetel is not, quote-unquote, actually part of her body, she has the right before execution to say what? Give it to my daughter. And if she says that, we could take the shetel after her death and give it to her daughter. But if she does not make such a stipulation before her death, when she dies, at the moment she is executed, that shetel is attached to her body. Anything that is attached to her body is called noye hames, and noye hames aser bano as well. Tanya Kava said, Nachmar Yitzchak, Ha'isha Shemesa, if a woman is executed, Nenin Bisara, you can get benefits from her hair, as we just explained before, the context of the Sheitel. Behema Shenesra, Asura Bano. But if a behema ultimately again was killed, was executed, you cannot get any benefit. Uma Hefesh Ben Zalaza, why the distinction? Very simply, Zu Misas Osarta. In the case of the woman, it is only her death that ultimately asers her for benefit. And that's why, again, if between sentencing and death, she makes stipulations about her sheitel, we can listen to that stipulation. Vizuba by animal, Gimardina Osarta. But ultimately, thinking about an animal, once the Gimardin ultimately, again, is what? Is mentioned, then halacha lemaisa, at the end of the day, the animal becomes aser. And therefore, again, once the gemardin is passed, the animal is totally off limits, and therefore, once it's executed, any part of the animal becomes aser. Haljun halach, hakom arichin. Mazel tov. Eime erachin, pachos misela, velo yesach mishnah. Let's begin the next parak. You cannot make an erach vow for less than a sela. Both say, sela, by the way, sela and shekel are used interchangeably. So you cannot have an erech vow for less than a shekel. For lo yaser al chamishim sela. And the highest value of an erech vow, both say, is what? 50 shekel, 50 sela. Ketzad, what's the example of this? Nosan sela v'hashir. Eino no sin klum. Pachos mi sela v'hashir. No sin chamisha sabo. So this is actually a very interesting case. If you look at Rashi, Rashi is nasan sela. It's the second line in Rashi. Ben asim sha'archu chamishim. Vaya ani v'nasan sela archo. Da ani nidon behasegan v'hashir pater. Well, this is this interesting case. So remember again, one of the things we were introduced to, and we'll delve into this more, is there's a concept that halacha lemaisa, if you made an erech vow, and then it turns out that you can't pay that value of that erech, so we evaluate you. Evaluate, in other words, that we bring you before the Kohen, and the Kohen assesses how much you're capable of paying. So let's say I am a male between the ages of 20 and 60, which means that my erech is 50 shekel. They bring me before the Kohen. Turns out I can't afford 50 shekel. So the Kohen says, fine, you could pay a sela. You could pay one shekel. One shekel, that's the minimum amount you could pay. One shekel. So I pay the shekel, and then Baruch Hashem, I hit right, I become very wealthy. What's the halacha? Eino no sin klum. Once I've paid my shekel, I have fulfilled the terms of my erechin vow. And even though now I have more money, Baruch Hashem, I do not have to pay the remaining 49 shekel. Once I paid my debt with the one shekel, we're done. Pachos misela, but if I paid less than a shekel, v'hashir, and then I became wealthy, no sin chamishim sela. Then I'm on the hook for what? The full amount of my erech vow. Wow. Why? Because the payment of less than a shekel is what? is fundamentally worthless. Hayu biyadav chamisha. Most isn't an interesting case. Let's say I have, so we'll say same case, I'm a male between the ages of 20 and 60, therefore I make an erech vow. My erech vow, therefore, is worth 50 shekel. Now it happens, see, I don't have 50 shekel, but I have 5 shekel to my name. I've got 5 shekel. So we'll say, so this is an interesting machlokes. Rabbi Meir says, Eino nosin ela achos. Rabbi Meir says, listen, if you only have 5 shekel to your name, which means you can't pay the full value of your erech vow, 50 shekel, so what do we assess you at? 1. We assess you at 1. The Chum say, no sin is kulan. Chum say, no, you can't pay 50, but you do have what? You do have 5, we're going to make you pay the whole 5. Ein erech and pachos. We sell them, we'll say the Mishnah restates the klal. We'd never assess an erech value less than 1 shekel, for lo yeser al chamishim, and never more than 50 shekel. So here we go. Ein erech and pachos. We sell them, we'll say, how do we know that an erech vow is never less than 1 shekel? The chsiv, the chol erkecha yeh b'shekel hakodesh. Because the pasuk says, all of your erech should be b'shekel hakodesh. So we'll say, we darshan from that, that an erech vow is never assessed. So we'll say, now I want to be clear. When you look at the categories of erechin, the lowest erechin value is what? Is actually 3 shekel. It's 3 shekel, right? That's a child from a month above. What it's saying is, if due to financial hardship, you cannot pay the value of your erech vow, that is the minimum amount. So that is the minimum amount. So fine. Where do we get that from? Because it says v'chol erkei b'shekel kodesh kol erech in sha'at amarich lo yipchusin mishekel v'lo. So I will say any therefore any erech vow should never be valued at less than 1 shekel v'lo yeser al chamishim slim. But a shekel, an erech vow is never more than 50 shekel. Dechsev chamishim, because the Torah says chamishim 50. So I will say, so that's our minimum and our maximum. I only have to my name 5 shekelim, and I made an erech vow ultimately again for 50 shekel. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha? Wait a machlokes. So right, the chachamim say you only have to give 1 shekel. Rabbi Meir says you only give 1. Chacham say you give 5. My time, Rabbi Meir, ksiv chamishim uksiv shekel. O chamishim, o shekel. So we'll say, Rabbi Meir's logic is like this. Torah gives a minimum and a maximum. And you got to fit into one of those categories. Either pay the amount of your erech vow, which is 50 shekel, or what? Or pay the minimum. There's really no in between. The Rabbanan say, Hahu l'chol erech in shatamarech lo yipchusim mishekel hudasa. So both say, listen to this. So the Rabbanan are saying, no. What the Torah is giving you are the two bookends, right? The highest amount of an erechin vow is 50. The lowest amount is 1. However, heicha de isle amakra asher tasig yad hanoder the yahare yado masages. Right? Ultimately, again, but the pasuk says asher tasig yad hanoder, which tells you what? Which says that halacha lemaisa, what if you can't afford 50, but you have more than 1, then what? Pay the amount that you can. So we'll say, so fundamental machlokes, Rav Meir says that the 50 and 1 are telling you that erech vows fit into extremes. There's no in between, right? There's no in between. Either you're paying 50 or you're paying 1. At the end of the day, says the Gemara, the Chacham on the other hand, say, no, Asher, Tasig Yado. Tasig Yado means, if you can't pay 50, but you have more than 1, pay whatever you can. Rabbi Meir, Hahu Yad Hanoder V'lo Yad Hanidah Hudas. So, you know what? Actually, we're going to stop over here, Rabbi Meir. Pick up Emirat Hashem again with the continuation of this sugya tomorrow. Shkoyah.